Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned, and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm interviewing Sean Castrina, who is a really cool dude. He's started more than 20 companies. He's written a lot of best-selling books, including The 8 Unbreakable Rules for Business Startup Success and The Greatest Entrepreneur in the World, and now the recent Greatest Business Plan in the World. He's been guest lecturer at many universities, and he's just a complete badass when it comes to startup, growth mindset, and philosophy. And yeah, great conversation, and we learn lots. So I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the podcast. So my pleasure to have you, Sean.
Great to be on the podcast, Sam.
Cool. So just to break into your initial mindset of how you decided that you just never wanted to like work for someone and just be very dependent on yourself. Do you think there was something in you already that just sort of was never going to sit with a specific job at all? Or was it like a specific experience?
I think I can work for the right person. I definitely have worked for people in a short period there. I did. I mean, if they're a strong leader, can do what they say, I can work with anybody. I've got lots of business partners. I think the one mindset that I have is I would rather bet on me than you. So if there's a choice and the ball's at the 1 yard line, I want the ball. And I've always had that mindset. And that's kind of an athletic mindset. In other words, I'm very comfortable betting on me for the win. And so when I realized I don't have any control over that, when I realized it in that situation that, you know, I thought I was playing the cards perfectly and then it doesn't work out, I'm like, man, I don't want to be in this position again. I'd rather create it myself. And if it goes under because I ran it into the ground or I made a bad decision, but I don't want it to be because, you know, there's just a change in staff or structure or whatever. And, you know, because I don't have a seat at that table, I could be excluded from it.
Yeah, I really agree with that mentality. And I can be very happy with my own mistakes because I know that if I make a mistake, I'm not going to make it again. But if I have suffer a problem because someone else, and I just like, if I'm just going to keep on having the same problem with someone else, it's like, it's up to me to fix this, which is like going and starting a business or something.
You know, it's funny. I learned that, you know, I used to set goals and I still do, obviously, but I realized that I used to set goals and they were dependent on what other people would do. Now, it would be such a really big goal, but half of it I had no control over. And I realized that they're dreams, they're not goals. See, goals are something I have 100% control over. It's based on my talent, energy, discipline, what I can do. In other words, I can run a marathon if I'm willing to get up every single day and whatever. But setting a goal to maybe, you know, take a space shuttle to the moon, there's a lot of factors that are outside of my control. So that will probably never happen. That's a dream. So I realized that I want to control goals I like. And I don't mind having some one thing in my life that's a dream that if it happens, I'm like, wow, how did that happen?
Okay, you want to be able to control everything. But it's the ability to like leverage other people and get them to do what you want to be able to really scale and grow the business though. So you still have to give up control. But
it's the funny thing. I have business partners in all my businesses and I'm not a control freak. I actually prefer to recruit really talented people and give them control. But at least I brought on that partner and gave them that authority. I'm fine with that. And if they screw it up, hey, I gave them the authority. I mentored them. I thought they were the right person. That's completely different than working in an organization. Somebody you don't even know hires somebody from another state. They come in. There's no personality. They don't like you. You don't click. Because when I bring on a business partner, there's some type of energy click. I respect them. I chose them at least. And if they make a bad decision and it happens, I'm fine with it. And we learn from it. If they make a mistake, it's no different than if I make a mistake because I empower them and I'm fine with that. When you own your own business, you can't control everything. There was a great quote by a legendary football coach, Bill Parcells. And he said, listen, if you want me to make dinner, let me do the grocery shopping. And his whole point was, you want these results, well, let me pick my team. So as a business owner, I get to pick my team. And then if we crash it, then it's on me.
So this leads nicely into the question of how do you pick the best people for your team? in terms of like, what are the questions that you ask? Where do you find them? How do you get them excited?
Yeah, I always have one unique like superpower, only one, and that's the ability to see potential in people before they see it. I look at people's energy, like they just have a bounce in their step. They do twice as much as everybody else. And Warren Buffett loves the same thing. There's no substitute for somebody who has energy. So that's a nice quality that I like. I like somebody who's smart. And I'm not saying book smart or, you know, SAT or ACT or any of that. That has nothing to do with it. In their area of proficiency or understanding of an industry or their area of strength, they're just head and shoulders above people. You know, and preferably I want that to be in an area that I'm not strong. So I like that type of quality. I like people that have integrity, that all my business partners have the ability to write a check at any time. Now there's some rules in that, but as a general rule, they could go in the office and write a check any day. So I don't ever want to worry about whether I'm getting robbed or not. I don't like to micromanage people. So I want people that have great energy, really smart in their area of expertise, but I want to trust them. I don't want to constantly be looking over going, is this person trying to screw me over? Are they going to steal from me? Are they going to leave my business to start another one? So they're the things that I kind of look for like right away. I want somebody who can do something I can't do. So the biggest thing I look for is like that puzzle fit. My business ideas, they're a dime a dozen. I don't think I've ever had any earth-shattering business idea. My ability to recruit extraordinarily talented people that want to go on the journey with me is what I do exceptionally well. So for 25 years, I've talked people into either giving up their business, joining my business, quitting their job, investing in me, taking no paycheck, taking a pay cut to join me on my mission. You got to have a certain charisma to do that. You got to have a level of confidence. They feel like the journey with you is going to be more fun than the journey that they are currently on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what are the kind of things that you say to convince them? If you say like your ideas aren't maybe the best, how do you explain to someone that like it is going to be better to be on the ride with you on something that maybe isn't what they're fully passionate about?
I remember I started a magazine 22 years ago in my town, and it had failed twice prior to me taking it over, kind of like a license agreement type of thing. And I remember they told me that it had failed and it had failed. And I was going to take it over and I was going to make it succeed. And I never forget, I went into a business that did like oil changes, tire rotations, and inspections. Okay, this is in America. And I met with the owner, he's like 65 years old. And he goes, I've seen this before, and kind of throws it down. Like, I don't care. And I looked at him politely, and I never forget, because I still do business with this company. And I say, let me just tell you this. I don't care who had it before me. I will not fail at this. Trust me when I tell you, I will not fail at this. And if you don't take these three spots that I'm offering you, it was like three key headings, your competitor right across the street, they will be in it. And if your competitor doesn't go in it, your competitor up the street will be in it. But I promise you this, as sure as you're sitting in that chair, 3 months from now, this magazine will print and it will continue to print. And you're going to regret the day that you passed up that heading. And he looked at me and he kind of threw it down. He goes, I'll take them. And he goes, I'll buy the edge. 20 some years later, I still do business with her company. I see him occasionally. He's in his 80s. But we joke about that because you got to bet on yourself. It's not so much the idea you have. The Facebook idea was great, but it was great in the hands of a guy like Mark Zuckerberg. Whether you like him or you don't, he clearly had something that conveyed to people that he could get this thing to the goal line. You know what I'm saying? Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, all of them, in the very beginning, they were just ordinary people with extraordinary confidence in the idea they had in front of them. And it was their extraordinary confidence in that idea and their ability to take it further where everybody joined them. And I don't know what that is, but it's innate. It's, you meet people like that and you're like, I think it'd be more fun to be on the boat with them than to be on my little kayak by myself.
Yeah, it's definitely something I've struggled with when you sort of first starting ideas. You're like, well, I think it would be a good idea. Come on. And but you sort of need to go out there and just sort of take the first few steps by yourself and just be like, right, I'm doing this. It's going to happen, and convince people that it's like a thing. It's been really interesting. Like, because I'm working on an idea currently, but it's the same idea. But like 6 months ago when I said it, some people were like, oh, yeah, it's a nice idea, whatever. But then like now, because of like I've got like a nice website, I'm like, I'm doing this, I'm getting investment. And people are like, wow, this is amazing. I can't wait. And they're like, it's the same idea.
I don't even expose the idea to people until I've brought it down the road a little bit. Because a lot of people can't see what we see. I see things 5 years down the road. And a lot of times it may not work the way I want it to, but that's fairly motivated people. We have an optimism. So we go into it thinking, yeah, I think this is a good idea. I have learned now because of my optimism that every idea sounds great inside my brain, but when I expose it to sunlight, it's not always as good. So I am open to getting my ideas criticized and smashed. Because I always figure if my business partners can destroy my idea, then the marketplace would have destroyed them. So save me the money. So I don't mind exposing my idea to criticism. And that's why I wrote The World's Greatest Business Plan. It just came out on Amazon. You can actually get it for free if you go to my web at seancastrina.com during this virus. It's a great book, how you can raise money with partners and venture capital. Tremendous business plan book. But I also put some bonus chapters in there for like entrepreneurs on like how to be a great entrepreneur, how to raise investment money. And the reason why I love this business plan is because it doesn't tell you that your business is always great. Like you'll get 7 questions into this and it's like 25 questions. 7 questions into it, I may tell you, you may discover that your business idea is bad. Like where a lot of the other business plan books don't ever ask you that question. They just kind of start with the narrative that the business is going to work. So they kind of put you all the way down page 200. And then you reverse engineer it from a business working. I don't do that in this book. We start beating the crap out of your idea, question number 2. Because if I can talk you out of going on a bad idea or investing in a bad idea, putting time to a bad idea, I feel like I've accomplished every bit as much as the business that succeeded. You just get it better. In other words, okay, so it's bad right now. It doesn't mean the idea is dead. It just means the idea is on hold. It just needs improvement.
Interesting. So I'm currently building an app for listening to podcasts and audiobooks that actually listen together with friends. So you can listen live at the same time, but in different places, or you can just see what each other have listened to and just catch up quite quickly, kind of like being in a book club. So that way, if someone listened to this episode and they love this episode with you, they could share it with their friend and you could both be able to talk about it. And like, they could talk about, oh, well, maybe like these ideas we have aren't so good. And they can actually sort of, as you hear the things, you can actually talk about the ideas that you're getting.
My brain doesn't know how to make that happen. Like there's 2 things that make a great business idea and you have one. Just so you know, I'm going to tell you why you have one. This is how you can tell. You ask yourself this question. Is every great business starts with a what if? What if I could develop an app where I could share podcasts with my friends? We could share books. It would be kind of be like a book club. When you said that, it immediately said to me, I like that. That's a good idea. Every business starts like that. Walt Disney, what if we could take a cartoon and turn it into a full-length movie? Tesla, what if we could take an electric car and make it just super fast and good looking? What if we could make a home computer? What if we could make your computers usable for everybody? Microsoft, you know, what if we could put your music library in your back pocket? Apple, every business starts with the what if. Now, the what if needs to be something that's strong and appealing to your marketplace. So when you say it, there's somebody who goes, yeah, that would be great. You have a great what if. Now, here's the hard part. So how? So how are you going to do it? See, like a business like that, I don't know the so how. So my head would just explode because it's so out of my tech. You saw me. I was fumbling over earbuds here. So I love the idea because I have obviously apps on my phone. I have Audible on my phone. I'm always asking people like, what's a great podcast? And they'll tell me like a person, but I'm like, no, what's the podcast? And I always say to them, can you just send me the link to that? Like just my son did that the other day. He's like, you got to listen to Joe Rogan talking to, you know, Elon Musk. And it's at like, it's a 2.5-hour podcast. I'm like, where? He goes, well, it's the last 40 minutes. I'm like, send me that. So it's funny that you bring that up. And I'm telling you, I was talking about that with people. Like I love the idea where you can break the podcast into 10 clips. Just taking your idea even further. Because seriously, Joe Rogan and like Jockick Willingham, they have 2.5-hour podcasts. I'm never going to listen to 2.5 hours.
As if like with your team or something, you can just sort of highlight the bits that you need for like
your business. Exactly. Like, listen, this 10 minutes was incredible. Or you got to listen to this 30 seconds. So I love the idea. And I'm just, this is an example why I love collaboration. Because you could say, man, I talked to this guy, Sean, one time, and he threw one idea out there that I hadn't thought about. You know, maybe doing podcasts even in chunks where you could just get the highlight. So you could say, hey, you can listen to this podcast. I think this guy's great. Here's an episode that's great. But if you want to, here's a clip that's great.
Yeah. And like people, you know, you don't have time to listen to everything these days. It's annoying. There's so much content, like filtering through other people. It's useful.
That's cool. Why I like it streamlined. I'm always like, give me the best thing in it. You know, even when I do a book, when I read a book, I open it up and on the front cover, I'll put like page 111 quote, you know, whatever. I'll basically take an entire book and outline it into one page.
Definitely. I do the same in my notes.
So I think your idea is very good.
Things. It's super annoying that you just like forget half what you listen to anyway, because you don't talk about it with other people or you don't have time to make the notes and things. But if you sort of make the notes by chatting, it's super useful. But yeah, so I'm a developer, so I'm coding it. We should be releasing like the beta next week, which will not be half as good as what I've just made it sound like, but you'll be able to listen at the same time as someone and probably see what they've listened to.
Well, you create a proof of concept.
Yeah, exactly.
It. Clearly it works in that podcasts are crazy popular. Audible is crazy popular. So you know there's a massive marketplace for it.
Definitely. Just sort of getting everyone to hear about it, getting them to like change app and use things, but it's going to happen.
This is why I love the what if. The what if question is so powerful. Like, what if you could sell memberships to like podcast people, example, let's say a person like me, and I get to give you my 5 highlights every week. So if you sell promotions where, okay, listen to me, you know, we can promote your podcast and or your highlights. Great idea. See, that's how you know when you're talking to an entrepreneur. Because once you brought that up, I didn't care about the podcast anymore. I didn't care about me. I started going crazy on your idea.
Definitely. That's cool. Okay. So you've built a lot of businesses. What would you say has been like the biggest mistake that you've made since you've already had success?
Growing them too fast. Adding new product line, let's say, adding a new location. Never kill the golden goose. When you get a business going, don't just assume you can duplicate it. Our tendency is to think that it can support a sister product or support of this. I always just say, just don't ever kill the golden goose. The thing that made you good or the one thing that's making you money, don't ever put that business at risk. Be really careful. I've done that before to where I had one thing going that was really good. It was making me money. And then in my desire to expand, I sucked all the capital, all the profit out of the one that was living, it was doing good, and ended up getting killed.
In terms of your own businesses then, how did you go around getting to the point where you'd call them a success? As in, did you sell most of them?
I sold a few, but generally I like to keep my companies. 3 of my initial businesses, 2 of which I don't own anymore, but all 3 of my initial first 5-year businesses still exist, which is tremendous, you know, that to have that durability. So I'm like, when I start a business, I'm kind of like a parent. I kind of want to keep it. And business to me that's successful is a business that's profitable.
What is success to you because you retired at 35? Why do you do it? What's the drive to keep on building businesses?
At 38, I didn't have to come to work. I can do kind of what I want when I want. But I love working and I would never retire. And I've never met a billionaire who does retire. Because the more successful you get, you do less of what you don't want to do. I try to do one thing every day I don't want to do because I always want to have that discipline, that I don't want to do it muscle. Because to be successful, you always got to do something you don't want to do. But the point is that I'm still starting companies. I started a digital marketing company in the last 18 months. It's doing fantastic. I'm looking to launch a platform building company right now for, you know, authors, experts, and freelancers to help them, you know, monetize their influence and their books and stuff like that, because it was a problem I had. And always great businesses typically come from solving a problem that you personally face. So I'm always looking to start a business. I hope that never stops.
In terms of marketing your businesses, what would you say have been your biggest tips or lessons in terms of getting success with that?
Yeah, this is what I tell anybody regarding marketing. And I get so many questions about branding and all this. I'm going to make marketing so simple. I'm going to wrap it up in under 3 minutes. It's going to be the best marketing lesson anybody's ever gotten. I guarantee it. All right. This is how you brand your company. What one promise, if you could make, your target customer would chase you down for your business. Just one promise. If you could deliver on it, that's your brand. You build your entire identity, your brand position around that. You think of every great company, Rolex. What if we could create a watch that made people feel prestigious and accomplished? It's a Rolex. You know, Tesla, again, what if we could build an electric car where, you know, you felt eco-friendly and all that, but it's fast as crap. It's gorgeous. People would chase you down for a car like that. I mean, look at it. The Volt went out. The Prius is a dead bomb. Why? Because they look like go-karts. But then you have a freaking Tesla that's a monster. These businesses, they come off of one big promise. If we could deliver this one big promise, customers would chase out after us. Southwest Airlines, what if we could create an airline where in the state of Texas, you can have direct flights to every major city affordable? It's always one big promise. Nike, what if we could create shoes and apparel that the most accomplished athletes in the world wore? Think about it. It's one audacious promise. And that's what you build your brand around. Your branding position is that one promise. Now, you can get cute with taglines, just do it, or all this other thing. But you think about Geico. Here's a perfect example. Geico. What if we could lower your car insurance by 15%? That was their brand position. That was the promise. Give us a call. Give us 15 minutes. And we think we can lower your car insurance by 15% or less. Every one of their commercials at the end of the day only talks about one thing, lowering your car insurance by 15%. Everything else is an eye catcher. It's an attention grabber. But they're only talking about one thing. You think about that. It's one thing. So I always tell people, man, just make one promise that if you could deliver on it, customers would chase you down for your business. Build your company around that. Build your marketing around that. You got one message. You got only one thing you're trying to communicate. That one promise. That's how you market. That's how your market is clean. It's effective. It's never confusing. What about my competition? Well, if you're marketing one promise that your competition's already doing, that's not a very good promise. See, it solves everything. It even gives you your competitive advantage because your promise better be something better than your competition. So it knocks down every stone. It gives you your unique selling position. It gives you your competitive advantage. It gives you your branding position. It gives you your marketing thing. If you can answer that one promise, it knocks down all the other dominoes in marketing.
Nice. I feel empowered. Thanks, man.
It really does work. What one promise?
Sweet.
One promise. If we could deliver on it, then it goes back to, okay, so how are we going to do it?
What would you say like the biggest mistakes you see people make besides the fact that they don't have the one brilliant promise?
In regards to marketing, they don't know how to market in that. This is why I hear people say, we're advertising. Like just because we're advertising, it's effective. It's like having a doctor's visit. I got my physical. Okay, you got your physical. Why did you go? What did the doctor say? It takes more than that. You got to do more than just advertising. You got to have a reason why you're marketing. It has to have a strategy. Who's my target customer? Or am I trying to expand my market share? In other words, this is who I'm, selling to right now. Well, maybe I want to expand that demographic, expand that age group. I just find that most people advertise and they don't know why. It has no strategy to it. And that's why I love that one promise. Because if you build everything around fulfilling that one promise, if all your messaging is consistent around that one promise, and that's that one promise that you think if people hear about it, they're going to love you, they're going to fall in love with your company, they're going to fall in love with you as an influencer, then just freaking keep delivering on that. Why are you going to do anything else? So I think they get, they don't know why they're doing it. It's too shotgun approach. One message, find one message and get it in the subconscious mind of your target customer and let it live there.
So what do you think is your biggest audacious goal for like the next 10 years that you want to change in the world?
I want to equip and encourage and educate entrepreneurs. I'm trying to figure out what the number is on that. In other words, do I give away this many books through my website or do I sell this many books? But I just love being an entrepreneur's evangelist in that. I think starting a business has the potential to give you the life that you could have always wanted. There's something about owning your own business. So I love that. And I love helping people that have a struggling business. They did the hard part. They made it through the 2 to 5 years, but they're just in that survival mode. So I kind of love those two audiences. I love the person who's starting it where like you were throwing ideas and I'm able to maybe polish it a little bit. I love that. And I love encouraging that person and telling them what mistakes you don't want to make. And then I love getting the person who's stuck. They're 15, 10 years into it. Their income hasn't gone up in years. I mean, the average business owner makes $71,000 a year. I don't own any earth-shattering business, but that's a good month. You're always going to have high achievers and low achievers. What I love doing is just sharing with people. My daughter's a school teacher, so I don't care what occupation you're in, but just have an entrepreneurial mindset. I told her, like during the Corona thing, like maybe you create a tutoring business, because a lot of kids or parents are going to feel like their kids really didn't get the education this year that they wanted. You know what I mean? It's obviously been disrupted. So my daughter, who's not an entrepreneurial person by nature, I go, well, why don't you create a tutoring program through Zoom? You do it with like three kids at one time and you work on one curriculum. So instead of having 30 kids on your Zoom call, like your typical classroom, you do it for three and you charge a certain amount. If you look at the Forbes 400 list, okay, there's a lot of medical companies on there. And they're doctors that created a company. These are people that started out as medical professionals and ended up entrepreneurs, because somewhere in the middle of it, they bumped into a what if. You see what I'm saying? So all I encourage people is just have an entrepreneurial mindset. Just look for opportunities. It's, you know, a 40-day-a-week job sometimes is not enough. So maybe you have a business on the side, or you take the business that you're working for and you create your own business. Owning a business is not for everybody, not even close. But for the people that are out there, I'd love to be the one keeping them from making the big mistakes.
That's nice. What do you think about the point of life?
Point of life is you need to be happy. And how you become happy, you got to figure that out. That needs to be in a healthy way. Think about it. All the great actors who committed suicide, and you got Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, and Prince. And on the outside, they looked like they had it all. But when you dig behind everything, what's the one thing they didn't have? They weren't happy. They had materials. They had people that worshiped them and thought they were the greatest, right? They had an accolade. What was the one thing that none of them had? They weren't happy. I just know that at the end of the day, I'm old enough to know that if I'm unhappy, it doesn't matter the nice cars I have in my garage. They don't make me happy. A big house doesn't make me happy. So I think at the end of the day, you got to come, and everybody's got to figure out what that is that makes them happy. But to go through life and be unhappy, to me, that would be the worst.
Yeah, for sure. Briefly then, what's one of your earliest memories or like interesting story from being a child?
I just remember a gym teacher one time telling me I was really good at something. And I knew that was an addiction. Somebody other than your family telling you you're great at something.
It's great that your parents kind of encourage you in things, but it sort of becomes a bit discounted, because sometimes you do something awful and then they'll be like, oh, that's great, Sam. You're like, but yeah. What does this mean, that when I am good, I'm actually bad? Or what's going on with
exactly.
This
mom? Like, yeah, so I think that affirmation was very good.
Cool. Then what's one of the kindest things someone has done for you?
When I came out of college, somebody let me live with them for free. Multiple people did, when I through summer interns and things like that. So yeah.
Interesting. Have you ever told them that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we have a college student that lives with us now for free. So we're paying it back. So we just wanted to pay it back.
Nice. Good to hear. Okay, then what's one of your favorite pieces of advice from a mentor or book or anything?
We always talk about reading books. What I'm learning is it's not how many books you read, it's how many books go through you. If you read a good book, read it 2 and 3 times. I found myself like going through like books really fast, because that's like, isn't that what every mentor expert does, reads tons of books? And I'm finding myself going back and rereading great books like 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Think and Grow Rich is so good. Everybody has different books that hit them in different stages in life. But you read a book, like marinate on it. Don't like chew it up like a dog, go through it slow and really digest that book when you find a good one. Go to the back of the book and look at the endnotes, other books that created that book where they did the research. Like, I mine for gold when I read a book.
Yeah, that's kind of half the reason why I was making my app, because it's just, you get so much more from each bit if you can discuss it with someone or like leave notes and like be able to like digest these things. And like, because you have so many more ideas when you see someone else's perception of like the same paragraph and things, you're like, oh crap, there's so much more to it. And like, if you're taking an exam on how to be an effective person, you wouldn't just read the book once and then like that's it. You'd like study it, you'd make notes, you'd sort of prepare, you'd ask yourself questions. So yeah, good piece of advice. And in general, just thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate it. Again, everybody, if you go to my site, seancastrina.com, you're going to be able to get a free book, The World's Greatest Business Plan. It's $18 on Amazon. I encourage you to go get that. Sam, man, thank you for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website,
growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.